magnetic loop stick with a preamp on it, and you rotate it and tilt it. That's what I'm referring to, for a seam only.
Gotcha. Well, okay. This is more or less similar. Of course, they're all theoretically on the same, almost on the same page. What this looks like, do you have the ARRL antenna book, first of all? Because I, they say one picture is worth 1,000 words. So if you have the antenna book, you can look on the receiving books. They have several in there. And if you look at the last part of the chapter, you'll see basically the one that I started out with. It's very easy for you to fabricate. I would almost say you most likely have everything on hand. You could, all you need is a couple of pieces of stick. Basically, a couple of pieces of PVC pipe. You could go to the lumberyard and you get 2 pieces of molding. You know, I used, in fact, my frame is made out of wood, out of about 3/4 inch by 1/4 inch trim. And, yeah, with a hand drill, you can fashion the thing together in a matter of minutes. And all you need is a piece of coax and a variable capacitor, and put it on any kind of little swivel mount. If you want to do the basic experiment, just see how the receiving loop behaves. Does it work for you? And if so, you can go to the next step, you know, and start looking into an RF amplifier, preamplifier system. Like I did, I can dig out signals. Let me put it this way: I can dig out signals. My noise level with the outside one wavelength loop last week at times it was 15/S9. With the inside loop and my nulling and all this jazz that I have inside, I have been able to bring the noise level down to F2. In fact, I worked a guy in Russia. Moscow at 1:00 in the morning. That was F2 running. He was running 50 watts, and he wanted to know how come. You know, he had called several American stations. They did not hear him with 50 watts into a compromised vertical. And when I came back to him, I can imagine the surprise that the signal was barely. My noise level happened to be down. I had it down to F1, and he was F2. So you can well imagine this would be basically impossible to work on 75 meters. So what you do with this loop, what I do, you can null, set it to where you null the noise. It's a resonant loop. And then with the second loop, I guess, enhancing upon it, you don't have to start out with that second loop inside there. If you want, then that one you can set to couple. And between the two of them, you get a happy medium. You get, and you can develop regeneration. And then through, a homebrew system like I homebrewed it, I may be on the market. There may be some commercial or, you know, units that you can buy that basically works on the old Q-multiplier type of system that I enhanced upon a Q-multiplier. Basically, I used the theory of my Q-multiplier back from the time when Heathkit was putting them on the market, the two Q-multipliers. I, of course, brought it up to date using solid-state components and everything, but bottom line is it does work extremely well. I am very satisfied with the results, Rich. So if you want to do the basic experiment, do you have the antenna book, first of all? Over.
Okay, I don't have the antenna book, but I have the ARRL handbook, fairly late version. It's probably in there in the antenna section.
No, I don't think I've seen it in there, Rich. I really don't. I know it's in the antenna book. They have it there, a nice picture of, and the formulas and everything to make it. So, you have to put it together. It's very simple. Like I say, you can be sitting in your chair and just with a, basically, you don't even need electric drill. It's just a couple of wood screws, and you can stick the thing basically together, and you can staple. Basically, that's what holds the coax cable around the edge of the frame, the shielded cable, piece of RJ59U. I just used these half-moon staples, you know, electrical staples. And all you need is a variable condenser from an old broadcast radio. Show you very easy how to determine, you know, the gaps. Of course, do a little math, and depends on how you're going to build it, to understand, you know, the situation that you're developing. distributed capacitors and lump capacitors that do the, you know, the formulation that they can get in resonance. But you could basically put the whole thing together for next to nothing and get an idea how it works before you go ahead and look into maybe a commercial version. But I would say that this homebrew version most likely would compare very compatible, or maybe exceed what I have now. I'm sure will exceed anything that's out there commercially. I feel that it's the only way in many cases to really use 75 meters right now with the noise situation. I've been on with Barry a number of times this past week, N2MD, and we've been, you know, talking and comparing notes and everything like that, and they're nice that without the situation of receiving, it would be impossible to operate over.
Hey, Rich. I just heard you say you do not own an ARRL antenna book. You do own a Radio Amateur's Handbook. Wow. When you, for a man of your resources that goes out and buys $240 pieces of software, you don't own that $25 or $30 book, whatever it is, I strongly recommend you buy that book. It's 2 inches thick. It's got 50 times more antenna information than you will find in the Radio Amateur's Handbook. It comes with a nice CD-ROM in the back with all kinds of programs. You buy that book and you're going to say, how in the world have I lived without that all these years? Please buy one. If you have the slightest bit of unhappiness with that book, I will buy it from you. N2EO, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I can tell you're shocked. Yeah, I think I have an old version from the 70s up in the attic, but I can't get up there right now. But yes, I should buy a new copy, update my library. But another thing is very interesting because the Palomar lipstick is ghastly expensive, more than I would care to spend. Probably up around, well, to put it this way, they get ridiculous prices. The amplifier is $145, and the plug-in loop, depending whether you want broadcast bands, 80 meters up to 40 meters beyond, is like $145 for a plug-in, which seems to me like, it's called a Palomar LA1. It's been on the market for years. It just seems ghastly expensive, especially if it doesn't do the job. Back to you, Dick. Turn it over to Mel. And to me, up.
Go ahead, Barry. And Barry, give us a little bit more audio. Talk a little closer to the mic. N2MB, go right ahead, you got the floor. I think Barry may have hit the button by mistake on his microphone and zipped off to some other frequency. N2MB, go right ahead.
Sorry about that. Okay, yeah, I hit my elbow hit the thing. Okay, I'm going to let Mel finish up with Richie. And I have a comment about something I saw on the Discovery Channel, and I think they got it wrong, and I want your comment on it. It's about a new way of propelling automobiles, and I think they're making a mistake, and I want your opinion on that. But we'll let Mel finish up first, and then I'll pick it up, right?
Okay. Rich, do you have any further comments you want to make with Mel?
No, that's about it, Rich. Thank you.
Okay. Barry, you have the floor.
Fantastic. Okay, this is the story. They had this article about automobiles being propelled by compressed air. And they said two tanks of compressed air could move these automobiles at speeds of 80 and 90 miles an hour. True, they were a little lighter than most cars because they didn't have all the metal in the engine. They only used aluminum for the compressors, or not the compressors, but the cycle pump in reverse, you know. And they made another comment. They said that there's a pump on board, and they said for about 50 cents worth of electricity, you could fill these two tanks up, and that car would go about 175 miles. And another 50 cents worth of electricity would do it again. It just didn't add up in my mind. Something's got to be wrong here. It's like, I understand that he has, what he's doing is he's not using heat to run the car, which is what, you know, gasoline, basically they burn it, and, you know, they're producing heat, it expands. Perhaps he's come upon a more efficient way to do this, circumventing the whole heat thing. That might, in other words, and also gasoline's pretty expensive, so maybe the, but he said, this is what doesn't add up in my mind. He said 50 cents worth of electricity would fill these tanks, and these cars could do 90 miles an hour for 175 miles. I think not. It sounds like his math is off, because I gotta believe that no matter how you cut it, it's watts per, you know, energy per mile. You're going to be burning up more electricity than that to propel that car 175 miles at 90 miles an hour. This just doesn't add up, over.
I see what you're saying, and there's a slim chance they're right, Barry. Let's assume that you live in a great portion of the United States where electricity is not like we're paying. We're probably paying 15 or 17 cents a kilowatt hour. Let's assume that we live in a place where the electricity is 10 cents a kilowatt hour. Oh, by the way, there are some places in Florida and Texas where the people are paying 4 and 5 cents a kilowatt hour. But let's assume 10. 10 cents a kilowatt hour, 50 cents, 5 kilowatt hours. 5,000 watt hours. A watt is a watt is a joule. A watt for a second is a joule. So, a kilowatt for an hour is, or 5 kilowatts for an hour is 18 million joules, 18 million watt seconds. So, if a horsepower is 746 watts, I divide that into 18 million, which I'm doing right now. Oops. Yep, there's the 746 watts. Therefore, I can get a horsepower of energy out of that 18 million joules for 24 million seconds. If it takes a good efficient car can probably give me that kind of velocity with let's say 50 horsepower. Therefore, I can do it for 482 seconds. Therefore, I can do it for 8 minutes. So I could run that car with that amount of energy at that velocity. If it took that many horsepower, I could do it for 8 minutes. They ain't going to do it very long, but as long as they've got an efficient system, the numbers are possible, Barry. N2MB, K2RIW in the tech net.
Okay, now of course he also said a number of other things. They said that the you put it in your driveway, you plug it in 4 hours or something, the tanks are filled again, and he figured in 4 hours he's burning again. He said about 50 cents worth of electricity. He also said that if you go to a filling station, if they had filling stations, you could fill the car up in 4 minutes, same tanks. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, and they said that the gas station would probably charge you about 50 cents to fill the tank, too. So he keeps using this number, and I don't know. Now, how many kilowatts does it take to run a car? You figure your average car is probably looking at about 150 horsepower, and this is, of course, energy which is being generated with gasoline. So we're looking at 150 horsepower, let's say, but you don't need that horsepower all the time. I mean, you know, you got to average this out. When you're pressing on the accelerator, you're looking for more horsepower than when you're just cruising. How does this look to you? Does this look like, why aren't we developing this technology or what?
Okay. Turns out that we in the United States are the one last major country that's not on the metric system. We rate our engines in horsepower. the rest of the world reads their engines and horsepower. If my car, let me backtrack here. Yeah. If my car needed 30 horsepower after it has accelerated to maintain speed, I probably can do that with 30 horsepower. 30 horsepower times 746 watts is 22 kilowatts. So, if I can generate 22 kilowatts of energy, I can keep my car rolling at a pretty nice velocity. And if I make the car really aerodynamic and light, I can do a lot better than that. But I'm guessing, I didn't see the program, I'm guessing one of the points of the program is that by taking air, compressing it into a tank, cooling that stored energy, then pouring it back through the equivalent of a steam engine, that's an extremely efficient storage system. The good news about batteries is that you're storing electricity instead of storing compressed gas. The bad news about batteries is the total energy input for charging and energy you get back out, and how many times you can do it, is less than desirable. Whereas compressing gas in a tank and letting it come back out to a steam engine, maybe I can do that 10,000 times before I have to do major engine overhaul. So as an energy storing system, it has certain merits. The idea of putting 35,000 pounds per square inch of compressed air in a tank and putting that in my trunk, and if anything goes wrong in an accident and that tank ruptures, it's a little bit of a small bomb. For that matter, storing lead-acid batteries in the car, which are very heavy, and you get in an accident and the acid goes spraying around. There's some unpleasantries here. We've learned to live with spraying gasoline around in an automobile accident, and we've come up with some pretty safe storage tanks with air pillows built inside and so on. So you hear very few accidents these days where the gas tank becomes ruptured. It's an extremely violent accident that ruptures the gas tank these days. So what's the best way to store energy and get it back out efficiently on an automobile? I think the jury is still out. Should we be running our cars on biodiesel? Should we be running them on wind power, electricity, compressed gas? We got to consider all of the above. So it's not ideal. I don't think the idea is going to catch on, but it is an interesting chunk of physics. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, Rich. Well, he says he solved the problem with exploding tanks. He's not using metal tanks. He's using four cylinders under the car made of some polycarbonate material. He says the idea is when these tanks rupture, they don't explode, they split open, and they don't create as much of a hazard. Of course, I think if you split a tank like that, you'd pretty much be sitting on top of a jet engine for a while. I'm curious how that would work, but that's interesting, though. He says that they split and that they don't shatter and, you know, and fragment and throw shards of metal all over the place. So he thinks he's got that problem solved. Because it's not a combustion engine, of course, there's no heat involved here, very little. There's no pollution involved here. And I agree with you. What we're talking about is just another way of storing energy. Is it a better way to store energy than, say, gasoline or hydrogen? It might be. It just might be. Also, the engine parts, the pumps themselves that run the wheels, it's not a gasoline thing, it doesn't have to have a cooling system. They're made almost 97% out of aluminum, so it's very light. And I thought about this afterwards. He's got a transmission in this thing, but I think he could get away with not having one. If he had an individual pump on each wheel, he might be able to have no transmission and save another couple of hundred pounds. Let me get back to Dick, and Dick, please give it to Richie, because he's obviously got something to put in on it. And 2MB.
Okay, it turns out that when it comes to pure energy density, it is extremely difficult to beat petroleum. Boy, Mother Nature has taken a zillion years to take all the past plant. plant and animal matter and process it into petroleum. We do a little bit more refining and process it into gasoline. 1 gallon of petroleum has approximately 120,000 BTUs of energy, and I'm doing a conversion right now. Wow, it's a biggie. 1 gallon of gasoline has 126 million joules, million watt seconds. So what you were discussing with that 50 cents worth of electricity and whatever, 1 gallon of gas is way ahead of that. So when it comes to how much energy can you put in the tank and how many miles can you drive, you're never going to beat petroleum. Hydrogen, biodiesel, electricity, compressed gas, nothing's going to come close. And that's one of the reasons we're so addicted to the darn stuff, oil. Boy, is it dense. It's got a lot of energy. So I said, one gallon of petroleum, 126 million watt seconds, millions of joules. Divide by that by 746 watts per horsepower, and you can figure out how many horsepower you're going to get for how many seconds. And I'm going to do that right now. 746 divide 170,000 seconds of watt seconds of joule. 100. I can get 1 horsepower out of 1 gallon of gas for 170,000 seconds.
Only if the engine was 100% efficient, but it's not.
If I cut it down to 10% efficiency, Barry, when you start off with a big number and you take 10% of it, you still got a big number. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, so, all right. So the answer to that is basically carry more tanks of air. I mean, you know, you got more efficiency, but that stuff is expensive. Air is cheaper. And you don't have to go to Saudi Arabia to get it. And you can do it in your backyard. So, you know, I mean, yes, more efficient. So you got to fill your tank up more frequently, you know, and that may not be so terrible. Richie, go ahead.
Hold on now. There's another problem here. Polycarbonate is a beautiful, strong material. You look at the latest PBS program on this guy. Can't think of his name right now. He's making a deep-diving vehicle, which is a sphere of polycarbonate material, and he's going down quite a few miles in the ocean with this thing. So polycarbonate is a beautiful, strong material, and yes, you use that for making tanks. Not only is it transparent, but you can see what's inside the tanks, and you can store a lot of energy, and if you're in an accident, those tanks will probably survive with no damage, and even if they do, the compressed gas simply leaks out, and it's not very dangerous. That's the good news. We're forgetting something here, Barry. You say you're going to charge them up at home. Where is the energy coming from at home to run the pump to charge your compressed air tanks? You're getting it from Con Edison.
That's my point. That's been what, and how can that possibly? How can that possibly be 50 cents a fill-up? That don't add up.
Well, yes, it does. The 50 cents, you and I can calculate how many kilowatt hours you can get for 50 cents. And the answer is 5 kilowatt hours, roughly. Not at Con Ed prices, but average across the United States. But that energy is coming from burning oil or coal. Some of the electric power stations are running on coal. Very few of them are running on nuclear. Most of them are running on petroleum. So ultimately, we are still getting our raw energy from petroleum. I wish we were more dedicated to using renewable energy resources, anything but petroleum. I wish we could convert the whole darn state of Arizona into one great big solar cell and then pipe that energy all over the United States. It sounds crazy. It's nowhere near as crazy as the amount of blood we're spilling in the Mideast. Back to you, Barry.
Yeah, not only that, but we should be converting the Northeast to wind power. We got a lot of wind around here. I think it's net proof that. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, and the crazy not in my backyard people don't want LIPA to put wind farms 4 miles off the south shore of Fire Island. They're going to need binoculars to see the things, and they're complaining that it's going to spoil the view of their horizon. Come on, you got it, Rich.
Okay, Jake. Well, I really. very small. People got scared by Chernobyl. But Chernobyl was a disaster waiting to happen. There was no containment. You're dealing with a communist country where nobody cared what happened. There was nobody oversee what went on. So movies came out like the China Syndrome and everybody got scared off. We shut down the nuclear power plants and now we're over in Iraq. So I don't know, but take what I was going to bring up before. What is your opinion of these hybrid cars? Like the Toyota, what do they call it? I forget. My neighbor has one. And oddly enough, he works for the New York State Lottery Commission. The New York State Lottery Commission saw fit to buy a whole fleet of these Toyotas and give them to their executives.
Yeah, I think Prius is one of the brand names of these hybrid vehicles, and they are very, very efficient. A buddy of mine owns a hybrid station wagon, it is a station wagon-like thing, and he's very happy with it. They've got a lot going for them. For people who are fairly affluent, it's a desirable way to go. The cars are considerably more expensive. I'm not sure. Maybe they've got a good resale value. So maybe it's a good investment. But I think they're approximately twice the price of an ordinary automobile. Am I anywhere near the right numbers on this one? Whoever knows, K2RIW in the TechNet. Hello? I heard somebody say two words and I didn't get anything out of it. Please repeat and go a little more slowly.
Yeah, and to FLF, a quick comment.
Mr. FLF, start with your name and go right ahead.
Hello again, Mark, Nancy from Fox with the Fox. If you have a pen, I'm going to give you a site to go to and check out this car, this electric car. They say it goes 0 to 60 in 4 seconds and it runs 250 miles to a charge. Okay, and it's mass produced. They can drop the price in half, but I'm not going to let you know how much that's going to cost. It's www.teslamotors.com. TESLAMOTORS.com. Check it out when you get a chance, guys. Back to you, Dick, and to us.
Very fine, Mark. Tesla Motors. TESLAMOTORS.com. Tesla Motors. So once again, I think you said 250 miles, 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. My goodness, that sounds awful good. And yes, it's expensive, but it could be reproduced. Is the brand name of the car Tesla Motors, or is it some other brand name I'd recognize? Back to you, Mark.
That's the name of the company, Tesla Motors. Check it out. It's, according to the what I'm reading here, it says it's about 1 cent per mile.
Spell Tesla again. Is it T-E-S-L-A or T-E-L-S-A? You're pronouncing it as if it's T-E-L-S-A.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, duh. Yes, Tesla. T-E-S-L-A.
Okay, now we believe you. And we're going to go and look at it. Anybody got any other comments?
1 cent per mile. That sounds impressive.
Sure does. And I think nowadays you're allowed to charge, what is it, 36 cents per mile if you're using your car for business?
I don't know how they get to the 1 cent per mile, though. And, one of the problems with electric cars is the batteries are very heavy, and they take up a lot of room. You know, that's the problem they got to solve. I'm telling you, big time thing.
Well, you're absolutely right. On electric cars, the batteries are a nasty problem. The good news about an electric car, if it's properly designed, is they can be using dynamic braking. I mean, ordinary cars, you bring the brake shoes against the drum, you take that beautiful, valuable, rolling kinetic energy and convert it into heat, you throw it away forever.
I was thinking that would work very well in the air-powered car as well.
Yes, it sure could. So during the dynamic braking, you could be pumping air back into the tanks as a method of, in other words, you run your steam engine backwards as a pump instead of as a steam engine. So steam and electricity have got this desirable characteristic of dynamic braking. Now, when you're driving at 60 miles an hour on a flat road going across the United States, that's not going to help you a whole lot. But when you're going through Far Rockaway and the metropolitan areas where you've got a stoplight every two blocks, dynamic braking could help an awful lot. What do you think, Barry?
Yeah, that may be how he's keeping the price down. I don't know, but he did mention a number of other things. I think it's worth looking into. I think that he's making one mistake, though. He has a transmission on this thing. And when I thought about it, I think four small engines instead of one big one might be able to eliminate that transmission completely. You would have four-wheel drive. It would also, of course, increase the efficiency of the thing, because transmissions are inefficient also. They have an inefficiency factor. Electric motors are very efficient. I think they're somewhere up around 90-something percent efficient. That's a good thing. That's why these electric cars have a shot, because of the very high efficiency of the electric motors. I don't know what the efficiency factor would be on an air-powered car. I'm not sure how you figure it.
Well, if you had a small steam engine at each wheel, and you feed a bunch of dynamic pneumatic tubes to each wheel, and each wheel, the steam engine can either power the wheel or act as a pump to pump gas back into the tank, that could be a very efficient system. The people who use compressed air to operate air-operated tools, drill motors and sanders and whatever, seem to think the system works awfully well. So should we have steam engines at each wheel or electric motors at each wheel? Darn interesting question. And since electricity storage is so difficult, one approach would be an electric motor at each wheel, which doesn't need a transmission. You just do pulse width modulation of the signal to the electric motor, and there's your equivalent of a transmission. Let the motors run on electricity. Let the compressed gas run a generator that generates the electricity that runs the motor. So now you've only got wiring in the car, not even pneumatic tubes, but yet the general energy storage is compressed air into polycarbonate tanks.
I thought about that, and I thought that there's an automatic amount of loss in a double conversion, and I'm not sure whether you would be better off generating electricity and going through the double conversion process. I don't know. That would take a lot of research.
Well, what I got against batteries is that the highest energy batteries I can inexpensively buy are lead-acid batteries. But lead-acid batteries, you can't discharge them very many times. You can't discharge them very deeply. Otherwise, you start getting into very low-capacity conditions. You take an ordinary lead-acid battery, and you discharge it all the way to ground, and it's down to a very small percentage of its original watt-hours it used to have. So, on top of that, when you use NiCad batteries, if you're really careful with them, you may get 1,000 charge-discharge cycles out of it. You do a significant amount of discharge of lead-acid batteries, and you don't get anywhere near that number of cycles. And particularly if you happen to be taking a long trip, don't get a chance to do a recharge very often, and you discharge them all the way, you create permanent damage. So lead-acid batteries as an energy storage system are kind of yucky. The overall cost of ownership strikes me kind of high. I'm liking the idea of compressing gas. Back to you, Barry.
Yeah, or even decompressing gas for four small generators, one by each electric motor. And then, of course, the electric motors could in turn run the compressors in reverse when you're trying to brake.
That's got something going for it. The nice thing about the compressed gas is if you design it correctly, I'll bet you I can charge and discharge that tank 10,000, 50,000 times. The only wear item I've got are the rings that are inside the steam engine slash compressor. And if I do a good job of designing them with the right kind of Teflon and really smooth cylinders, they may last an awful long time. And a total engine overhaul to replace those rings in the steam engine, that's a very simple process. I like the repair. I like the major engine overhaul capability. I like the fact that the energy storage system can be used 10,000 times with no decrease in capacity. It doesn't wear out.
Okay, let me give you the problem. I was thinking about them. One is all cars need electric lights. So you're going to have some storage system just to keep the lights going. There was another problem I thought about. Let me a second here. So they have need electric lights. That was one. Oh, yes. Also in the winter, today is proof of it, you got to heat that car. It gets really cold in there. However, I think a compressed air system might give you free air conditioning in the summer, because when you decompress gas, that's one of the byproducts.
Yes, it is. Making heat in the wintertime is going to be tough. You're still going to be carrying one car battery to run your lights, and you're going to have some kind of a system to periodically charge it. But it has some desirable characteristics.
Remember, the electricity you're running to run the wheels continuously on a parkway, some of that electricity could easily be used for lighting.
Yes, it could. And so, this was Discovery Channel. What day did you see that? Do you think it's going to be repeated, Barry?
I'm sure they'll repeat it. I think it was the Science Channel. I think it was 2 days ago. But they didn't really cover it in the kind of detail we did. I think this technology could be carried a hell of a lot further.
These polycarbonate tanks, do they look like miniature CO2 containers?
They look like big CO2 containers, yeah. They're 6 feet long, and they appeared to be about, 16 or 18 inches around. They said two tanks on the car would propel the car for about 175 miles. I'm thinking we should carry that a little further and, while we're doing it already, have four tanks and have a hell of a range on this thing. And, of course, if gas stations also supplied you with compressed air, that wouldn't be a major thing to do, to have a whole country full of compressed air stations. And, of course, you could have them in your, at your house. You could compress air at your house, or you could... They said they sort of keeping a compressor engine on board, electrically powered, and compressed it. So 4 hours if you do it yourself, or 4 hours if you happen to be in a motel, So there's a hell of a lot of ways to handle this problem. And, of course, it's non-polluting. You could run it in your garage, and it's not going to hurt you, and it doesn't create any pollution. There's a hell of a lot of good things about this.
Yes, it does. And the parking lot of the company you drive to could have a whole bunch of little stands like you used to have at a drive-in movie theater. You plug in your car and you charge it while you charge the compressed air tank while you're at work. I see all kinds of ways that this could be nice. The only problem is that the raw energy is still coming from petroleum and coal. We still have to do something at the beginning of this whole process of where our raw energy comes from.
Yeah, but what you're saying, I keep saying no, and you keep saying yes. It appears to be a very efficient conversion of this energy. It seems to be more efficient than it should be.
Yeah, well, you and I did a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation, and with 50 cents worth of electricity, you're not going to get a whole lot of hours of driving at 60 miles an hour, unless your vehicle is extremely aerodynamic. When you and I are rolling at 60 miles an hour, the back pressure of the wind is the major consumption of energy, and our automobiles are made much more for beauty than they are for aerodynamics.
I know. I don't think there's enough exhaust energy to jet propel the thing. I mean, you could use it again. I don't think that would work, but it's, you know, I gotta believe that it's gonna cost more to run it than these guys are saying. I just don't know where the, you know, something's wrong with the equation, Dick. It just ain't sitting right.
Yeah, I just calculated with the 50 cents worth, you get a whole lot of power, but only for 8 minutes. Well, 8 minutes is not gonna carry me very many miles.
Right, right. We're looking for 200-250 miles of capacity, you know, at whatever speed. But 250 miles of capacity, that's what we're looking at here, to make this thing a viable technology. You got to have that much range.
I think a full tank of gas on my 1999 Toyota Camry, if I drive correctly, I think I get 360 miles on a tank of gas.
Okay, and over time, I think this could be brought to that level. I think as a start out, 250 miles is acceptable, especially if there's plenty of places to recharge your tank. Then it would be acceptable.
I agree with you. Some of the electric cars that were offered in the past had mileages like 80 miles. And for people who are using 200-300 mile type cars with one tank full of gas, an 80 mile electric car that's very expensive and you can't go through many charge-discharge cycles of the batteries, people are not very attracted by that. And you're still using raw petroleum to charge the Dodge batteries. So I can see how electric cars are having a tough time catching on. But this has got some merit. I like the fact that the energy storage system can probably be used 10,000 times. That's really giving me an eyebrow raising.
KB2YEW.
Go right ahead. Start off with your name, sir.
Yeah, good evening. Name here is Guy. I've been listening for a while. Very intriguing net. A buddy of mine has one of those Toyota, I think it's the Prius. And he is extremely satisfied with it. Says he actually gets 55 to 58 miles per gallon on it. I drove in the car. The car is totally silent. It uses electric power until you really step on the gas, and then this little tiny gas engine kicks in just to recharge the batteries. And he likes it. I think he paid around $32,000 for it, I believe it was. $32,000 or $33,000. Wasn't that much.
And if he's getting 50 miles to the gallon, 300 miles would be what? 6 gallons. In other words, if he's got a 6 gallon tank and 50 miles to the gallon, he can go 300 miles.
If it was a gasoline engine running the car completely, why is he getting less efficiency than if he's double converting to electricity?
Well, that engine that's in the Prius has a highly efficient single RPM that it runs at. See, the engine in your and my car has got to go over this tremendous range of idling all the way up to 6,000 RPM to try to make an engine efficient across that whole power curve. It's just out of sight. You build an extremely small engine that runs at one particular very efficient velocity, and it's running a generator that's charging the battery. That combined with electric motors at the wheels, dynamic braking, and an efficient automobile as far as aerodynamics is concerned, and the bottom line of all of that is 50 miles per gallon. Back to you, Barry.
WD2HWW, would an important comment on that?
Yes, Harry, go ahead.
There is one little problem with these cars. They don't make any noise. If you can't see, you don't know when they're coming. And there's probably going to be accidents with those cars. Just, they have to make those cars make some kind of noise. Even sighted people use their hearing when they're crossing the street. Just want to let you know about that. WD2HWW.
You're absolutely right. The car is totally, totally silent. When you take your foot off the gas and you're at the light, it doesn't make a sound. Nothing.
I can handle that one. I'm going to put loudspeakers on in front of the car, aimed forward. I'm going to run a tape recorder with engine sound, because the loudspeakers are well insulated, sound insulated, and aim forward. Only the people in front of the car hear the engine noise. You, the passenger inside, are still in a quiet car. You give me a couple of watts of acoustic power, and I can give you engine noises.
That's a solid move. No, Dick, it actually has to be looked at. You know, don't make fun of it. You actually got to hear the noise on the side of a car. Because look at a person who is, you know, look at a person who might be using a dog or a cane, and he's using his hearing to navigate, to go to parallel himself with traffic or walk down a sidewalk. That is a major concern of people with disabilities. And I'm not saying, there's got to be a technology. You're right. There has to be a way to make the cars a little bit more. We have people in the blindness community that want to outlaw these cars. No, I don't agree with that. You're not going to stop people from using these cars. But we got to figure out a technology so that the car can exist with people.
Howie, you know, the air-powered cars are not silent. They do make noise.
Yeah, but Howie, I wasn't making a joke when I said you put loudspeakers in the forward grille of the car and you pour a hi-fi system to it with an engine noise. That way people hear the car coming. Maybe you have some small loudspeakers on the side, and maybe you have one out the back. But the passengers don't have to suffer with the noise, but the people outside will hear the car coming and know to get out of the way. So with a hi-fi system, I can make the sound that removes that danger. I wasn't kidding. Back to you, Allie.
I know you aren't kidding. I know that you aren't kidding. I agree with you. There's got to have to be collaboration between the people, but are people going to be willing to pay the extra few dollars? What I'm worried about, what's going to happen when a little kid is playing in the street and the car backs up, or the car's coming down the street? You know, you could be playing in the street, or you could be have your back to the car and the car's coming. You will move because your hearing will take over and say, hey, I got to get out of the way. Think of, they're not thinking about this, Detroit, or the manufacturer.
You know, Howie, a lot of cars today, a lot of Cadillacs, a lot of the really luxury cars, the engines don't make a lot of noise. Most of the noise you're hearing is tire noise on these cars. When you're sitting on a parkway and cars are going by, you're not hearing the engine, you're hearing the tires.
And the wind?
You're hearing the engine, too. Even these cars don't make it. In city traffic, the problem is these cars, the Cadillac, no, if it's a gas engine, you're going to hear it. The problem is if you have a noisy car and a quiet car, you're going to mask it. It is a problem.
You sit inside of a well-running Rolls Royce, you cannot tell that engine is idling without looking at the instrument panel.
I understand there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just making a comment. WD2HWW.
Cleo.
Go ahead, Rich.
Please, Jerry Trump. Probably they should have a panel of people who are visually impaired to make recommendations for this so people can live with this.
Yeah, I don't think these problems...
They have organizations do it first on the internet. The nickname of these cars are called quiet cars. The city of New York is putting a lot of these cars on the road as taxis. A lot of the taxis are going to this electric gas car. All right, over to Dick, WD2HWW. We'll be standing by.
Welcome to...
Yeah, all of these are not showstoppers. We can think of some pretty good solutions. And so I know that the president wants us to start setting a goal for much higher mileage in our automobiles. Remember back in the days of the first gas embargo, oil embargo, 1973, an awful lot of us were driving automobiles that gave us 12, 13, 14, and 15 miles per gallon. We've come a long way since then. And even if the president gets his goal in X number of years where we all get up to 50 or 60 miles per gallon, that's going to make a percentage of improvement. we still have a tremendous amount of oil consumption. 20 million barrels per day are burned in this country. By some magic, with all of that energy resources and technology, we got to get off that that addiction we have to oil.
Rick?
Go ahead, Rich.
Please say like a silly question. Is it possible to use safely a nuclear battery in an almost indestructible case? I know they use the spacecraft. The danger there is that the craft can re-enter the earth and burn up. You don't have that problem in a car burning up in the atmosphere. I can't believe it's impossible to make a safe nuclear battery that can stand, say, 10 times the force of a car crash.
Richie, that's not a silly question, but I think the problem isn't making it safe while you're using it. The problem is disposing of all that stuff.
You think the public would go for a nuclear car? Come on. You got enough problems with the public wanting radio. You tell them they got a nuclear battery, you won't sell that car. You won't be able to give away the car.
Yeah, you're...
Hey, Howard. I think it's a lot safer. People may not agree with me, but it's a lot safer to have nuclear cars than to have troops all over the Middle East.
You know, I'm going to make a comment on that. I want to make a comment about this, about the troops. We would be there regardless of the oil. You can't just walk away. Tomorrow morning, we stop taking the oil, we would still have to do something about the Middle East, okay? People got to realize this. We got involved in World War II for a reason. You can't walk away and say we're not going to be involved in the world. That's like going back to isolationism. Just be, you know, it is part of the problem. But if we were to cut off our oil tomorrow morning, do you really think that terrorism would stop? Do you really think any of this stuff would stop? I don't think so.
I think it would, actually. Well, terrorism would still be there, but hopefully we wouldn't be the target. We would be thoroughly uninvolved. You know, we'd let the Shias and the Sunnis bomb each other to kingdom come, and we'd stand back and say, you guys are silly, but if that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it.
Let me ask you a question, Dick. What happened to a little guy called a paper hanger? People sat back and said, oh, we're not going to get involved. You know, it's Europe's problem. Stuff like that can fester and turn into a world problem. You can't put your head in the sand. I'm sorry.
W2HWW. Okay, you make a good point.
I mean, we basically had to come to England's support. If we would allow Hitler to take over, he was killing 6 million Jews. All right? What Saddam Hussein and these other people are doing is killing each other. We did say a long time ago we would never let that happen. So are we saying that we're going back on our commitment to the international community where we don't care if people kill each other? Dick, you have to look at, you know, oil is part of it, but you can't walk away from your obligations if you want to be a superpower.
Yeah, right now we are the world's policemen to some degree. By the way, he killed 6 million Jews, he killed 22 million Soviets. He did an awful lot of destruction.
If we would have got in there in 1935, and we wouldn't have the BS or the Versailles Treaty, we wouldn't have had any of this. Now look at Dark Four. Could we get involved in Dark Four? We're not getting... What is more important? Look at what's happening in Dark Four. There's no oil, and we're going to have to get involved at some point. There's people dying every day of starvation, of murder. So just because you're not going to have oil, you can't just get up and walk away because of a couple of deaths. You have to be willing to use your force. And you can't be, you know, got to go back to people like Carter. Look at the presidents who caused this problem when they turned and run. Carter, you know, we negotiated. We pulled our troops out of Lebanon after 250 were dead. You know, 9/11 proved the point. You think 9/11 was caused because of oil? No, it was caused because we don't agree with them. We don't believe in the same religions. Look at what happens when someone has a comic or someone draws pictures in a newspaper. These people go ape. What can I tell you?
Hell yeah, I don't want to belabor the point, but I think 9/11 can be traced to oil. One way or another, you would trace 9/11 back to oil. Some other things perhaps not, but them coming over here and picking on us was related to oil. I really believe it.
Yes, so do I. From Osama bin Laden's point of view, we had a whole lot of troops sitting on Saudi soil. From his point of view, that was sacred land, and those infidels were violating it. That's what drove him to create the 9/11 situation. We were in the Saudi region protecting Kuwait. Kuwait was because we didn't want Iraq to capture first the Kuwaiti oil fields and then eventually the Saudi oil fields. So I tend to agree with you, Barry. We were there because of oil, and he considered it a sacred violation.
Oscar, that's true. Also there because we don't want the Soviets to get it. Are you saying that we should pull back all around the world because we're afraid of something? I mean, I don't think so. I think, Dick, what you're saying...
What happened to the car conversation?
Away from conflict. If you run away, it's like a schoolyard bully. If you give the bully all he wants, he's going to keep coming after you.
The car conversation is not dead because what's happening here is the cars are running on oil, and that's how we got into this pickle in the first place.
There we
are. What's wrong with trade? Are you saying that we shouldn't have trade? Someone could say that if we buy stuff from China, we're enabling the communists or whatever. Are you saying that trade? Did we steal the oil? We gave them money for the oil. We trade goods. I mean, you're looking at this in the wrong way. I mean, are we going to give up all our interests around the world because we're afraid of fighting?
Hey, fellas, we are getting a little bit left of center of electronics and subjects of interest to ham radio operators. We're going a little left of field here into politics. So maybe we should calm it down a little bit.
But Dick, all I know is that if people don't agree, you think it's going left of field. I don't agree with you, but then... You're running in that WB2HWW.
Yeah, we gotta make a feeble attempt to keep everybody happy. They intend to tune to this frequency at this time and hear the subject of electronics being discussed. And yes, we are talking about the electronics of cars. And so we gotta limit it a little bit. Anybody got any other ham radio related questions we think we should be discussing? Give us a call at his name right now.
KB2YEW. The shop, what I was talking about on loops before we got off on this tangent, Dick, over.
Okay.
CUK.
Okay, CUK and YEAW or YEW. Start off with your name and your comment or question, sir.
KB2YEW, the name is Guy.
Go ahead, Guy.
Okay, I didn't know if you were talking to me. Yeah, I was actually enjoying this conversation, getting off on a little bit of the left wing there. I didn't want to start throwing my two cents in because then we would have really been going crazy. My opinion is, if you're going to go over there you got to go over there wholeheartedly and keep the news reporters out. But that's just my two cents. Getting back to a ham radio related topic, I got a question. I wanted to know if anybody had any first-hand experience. I'm looking for something that actually doesn't exist. Well, in all reality, doesn't exist. I'm looking for a non-directional antenna that I could work AO-51. Somewhat well with. I'm trying verticals, I'm trying horizontals, but getting nowhere. Getting a lot of nulls, voids, and all kind of dead spots.